It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Thunderstruck here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here in the afternoon on Liberty News Radio. And we got Liberty Radio Network. They're doing some work, too, and they're going to be at the Pork Fest with me, and we're going to be broadcasting live from there and just talking to young people, just like we're doing here. And another gentleman, one of our videographers, Drew Phillips, we'll talk to him at the bottom of the hour because I can't keep pushing off Meredith Whitney, I keep promising you. So we'll get to that here in just a second. But he's with We Are Change Arizona. Now, he's a videographer. He does a lot of the video and different things here and covering different talking about a lot of the things that he's doing now, and We Are Change in Utah. I think they're going to Salt Lake. They're having a big woohoo in the beginning of July. So we're going to talk about that. You get a little beat on what's going on there. These are the young men and women that are got their video camera going up to the powers that be and saying, liar, and getting whatever their response is. And they're not playing. You know, they're having fun, but it's not play. And they know it. And there's people getting arrested all the time. And, of course, they just make another big deal out of that. I mean, you know, what governments have to do is go totalitarian police state. You can't have tyranny and freedom coexist together. It doesn't work that way. One or the other has to conquer the other. And what happens, tyranny always rears its head and starts going after the freedom guys. And then, you know, they complain and make fun of them and do the Nixon thing. You can laugh, have them laugh with you, but you don't want them laughing at you. Well, what happens when everybody's laughing at the government? Well, that's what, the segment that we're going to play with the left breaking with Obama from Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. We'll play that one, too, and you'll like that. I'm going to go ahead and play this. We'll get to it right now because I keep promising that. Meredith Whitney on CNBC. She was with Oppenheimer Group at one time and predicted what was happening with the banks. CNBC is like, no, it wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. But we'll go ahead and do it in two parts here because it's 10 minutes and we'll just do, part of it now and then we'll finish it up in the next segment. Because I want you to listen to what she's saying and we'll talk about it. Here we go.
Let's get to our guest host for the next hour. She is one of the most respected and well-known names on Wall Street. Joining us right now is bank analyst Meredith Whitney. She is the founder and CEO of Meredith Whitney Advisory Group. And Meredith, it's great to have you back. It's been a while.
It's great to be here.
It's great to see you. We keep kicking around this whole idea of what's happening in the economy now, where we're headed, whether we're back for a double dip or not. And it seems to me lately that people who no matter which side they think they're coming from this, they all seem to be in some sort of GDP of about 2-3%. They all expect unemployment to remain relatively high. But a lot of people take different things out of this in terms of what it means for the markets overall. Why don't you lay out where you think we're headed and what the market implications are?
Okay, well, I've been bearish for a long period of time. Last year, the government involvement made the banks do really well. The government's out of the pool right now, and so we're on our own. And I think the big challenge for the economy is the role of the state and local governments and the fact that they're cutting jobs in a material way or about to cut jobs in a material way for the first time on record, really since 1955 when this all started. I think they cut at least 2 million jobs. How that weighs on the economy is, in many states, government spending, state and local spending, is 10% of the state GDP. And so they're cutting programs there. That hurts the low end. They're raising taxes. That hurts the high end. And so you're squeezed from all sides. And there's really nowhere to turn. The states that produce the highest GDPs, the states that contributed the most to overall GDP, were the most the states that had the most, you know, closest relationship to real estate. That's California, Florida, Arizona, Nevada. I mean, those states are vastly underwater. So I think that we're going to be up for a very rough second half. And 2%+ GDP growth would be great.
There's no thought that the central banks are going to step out to help support some of these arenas at this point, is there? I mean, you're still talking about a lot of stimulus that's working its way through the pipelines.
Well, as far as the United States are concerned, Obama has proposed a $50 billion bailout package for the states, but the states are underwater $200 billion. So it's really a drop in the bucket. I have no idea whether it goes through or not, but there's structural problems that make it very difficult for the economy to move forward with, you know, you don't have funding. That's the last of the issues at this point. But you have real structural employment issues. I don't see that getting better anytime soon.
Did the consumer perform better than you were thinking? Because I remember the times you were on, you said, I know consumers. That's the one thing I do know, and that's consumers. And they were not in a position, really, to do much, and yet I think they performed better. But I'm just wondering, did they kick the can down the road? Are they more leveraged now? Was it like a false feeling of security for how they did? Did they do better than you thought?
Areas did better than I thought. And here's where, like, I never imagined. For the last 3 years, I've seen things that I would never imagine before. What happened over the last year has been the government has and the banks have provided a lot of mortgage modification programs. And a lot of consumers have been smart enough to say, okay, well, if I wait, I can get a better deal on a modification program in 2, 3, 6 months. So I'm going to pay the bills that I need the most, my credit card bill, my auto bill, and even my home equity bill to a certain extent. And they've been not paying their mortgage bill. So you look at the non-performing loans on bank balance sheets, they've doubled inside of 1 year alone. And they stand, in terms of mortgages, they stand at the top four banks, which control two-thirds of the mortgage industry anyway, at over one time all of the mortgages that have been charged off since 2005. So you've got this massive sort of rotting pool of assets on bank balance sheets that have provided the consumer excess cash by not paying one big payment and being able to pay others.
I've seen the articles where it changes a person's life. They say, hey, we're going out to dinner again. We're doing this. We're doing that. We're not paying our mortgage. I feel so much better. And it's like, that is the ultimate kick in the can down the road. Don't you have
to? It's wild. Yeah, it's wild. And you think about that. There are other issues in terms of deflationary factors. You know, gas is up year on year, but the idea that rates are down, so mortgage payments less. If you're not paying your mortgage, that's the most deflationary, you know, benefit you could possibly have. And that's really scary because you get into moral hazard issues, you get into cultural issues, but that's what's been happening. No, I didn't see it coming that way at all.
Okay, I did. Now, let me tell you what's going on here. There's three hosts that are interviewing Meredith Whitney. The one that was just talking, well, you said that you know customers and clients and didn't they really do better and didn't they this? And he's kind of soft trying to, you know, get a little dig at her, okay? Because he was going, oh, they're going to do better and so on, because they were thinking that the TARP funds and all the stimulus was going to trickle down and then wound up, I don't know, it didn't go in, and the banks kept it, and they said thank you, and their stock went up. But what happened was people stopped paying their mortgage because they know that their friends are, you know, nobody's for it. They'll go 6 months, a year, 2 years. I know people 2 years. They haven't paid a lick of mortgage and they're not foreclosing on. I'm sure this is going to start. They're going to start foreclosing. But they don't need, if they're not allowed to do short sales, if the government is threatening banks with audits, if they start to take the shadow inventory and start flooding, why would they want to increase their shadow inventory? Why would they go out and foreclose on homes that people aren't paying on if they're not allowed to sell the homes now? Heck, they pay the people to stay there just so somebody didn't go in and rip off the copper. So this is craziness, and this is what she's talking about, the moral hazard. The moral hazard is that, you know, people go, I'm good. I'm not paying. I'm staying here, and I'm getting something for free. You know, it's a cultural change, and a lot of these people didn't see that because they looked at people as, you know, no, I got to pay my bills, and I need to. What happens when you can't? So what do they do? they stop paying their mortgage, especially when it hits in a new reset on their adjustable rates, and it's $2,000, $3,000 a month for what used to be a middle-class home. Homes that are now going for, you know, you pay, you know, $600-$700 a month on a mortgage of 80-something thousand, and what was it 3 years ago, 2 years ago? You know, are you up around, you know, $2,000? Certainly when the arms reset and they're going to keep paying, you know, when they can go get the home half as much and rent it, or they can just live there for free and nobody bother them until they get kicked out. And then they can pay cash for their house for, you know, half, a third of what they owe on it. What did you think was going to happen? I didn't see it coming. I'm like, why? Why? We'll finish up with Meredith on CNBC when we come back. You guys stay right there. This is, I'm just a messenger. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Some more freedom. Can I have some more, please, sir? How about I demand it? You know, because if you don't, I mean, they're not going to just give it to you, you know, unless they promise it to you, and, you know, just get you to, I don't know, not shoot them. You know, that reminds me, Claire Wolf, she had a book in the mid-90s. It was called 101 Things to Do Till the Revolution. And it was fun. I mean, it was a practical, you know, stuff for any activist. You know, you should do this, you should do that, you shouldn't do this, a waste of time of that. And the famous quote that was in the book, I think it was in the opening jacket or something, said, we're at a strange time in America to where, at that awkward moment, to where it's too late to work within the system, but it's too early to start shooting the bastards. And I that was 15 years ago. I don't know. Are we closer? You know, can we just put the daisies in the gun barrels? I vote Levolution. You know, because you know, then what happens? You take over from bad guys with violence, and you got violent people in charge again. Yay! You know, we got to change us. Well, let's go ahead and finish up with Meredith Whitney on CNBC. Here we go. It's just this morning. Here we go.
Mortgage payments less. If you're not paying your mortgage, that's the most deflationary, you know, benefit you could possibly have. And that's really scary because you get into moral hazard issues, you get into cultural issues, but that's what's been happening. No, I didn't see it coming that way at all.
So where do you think retail spending would be if they had kept paying their mortgages?
A lot lower, right?
Yeah.
And you see retail spending start to fade. I think, you know, the banks are picking up the thing that's happening for the first time in a year is this quarter, during the second quarter, which you'll see the results next month, is banks are actually accelerating their foreclosure programs, accelerating their short sale programs. So you're going to see, you know, people who weren't paying their mortgage start to have to pay rent, and that'll be a jar to the economy, too.
And the housing prices, I assume, if we see more short sales?
Well, that's a big deal because it's not so much that it's to housing prices, because unequivocally I see a double dip in housing. There's no doubt about it. But you see a real leg down when you have the supply displacement, when you foreclose and then you just have to sell. Short sales, exactly. It's usually a 20% drop on a short sale.
Fannie and Freddie have stepped in such a big way, though. I mean, they are keeping the entire market afloat at this point, it seems.
They're providing, in 2009, they provided 95% of all of the mortgages issued. And 45% of the mortgages issued were on the tax, first-time tax buyer. So there's not a lot of mortgage activity out there. And you think, how home price grow? How can a mortgage market grow? In fact, it shrunk for the eighth consecutive quarter. You know, house prices are, there's no other way to look at it. They're going down again. And what pressure that puts on the overall economy is going to get
so consumers have not deleveraged, and we haven't used this last year for the consumer to sort of strengthen, to be in a position to help us lead the,
it's the opposite.
It's gotten worse.
Yeah.
And then you think you're looking for, I don't know how many layoffs at the state and local level. And
2 million.
How many?
2 million.
2 million there. and employment figures have been weak. So this all seems to portend lower than expected economic activity here.
Yeah, we did a lot of sort of unorthodox component part analysis. And if you look at the large corporates, which are doing really, really well, fired 3 million people in this credit cycle. The small businesses fired 5 million people in this credit cycle. But small businesses have been responsible for over 60% of the job creation since 1994. And if you look at, there's no small coincidence to the fact that 1994 on, small businesses benefited from the securitization market, from home equity loans, from credit card loans. And home equity loans and credit card loans have not been available. Credit card loans have been cut by $1.5 trillion. We think it goes up another trillion. Yeah, I saw that.
There's an entire section in the journal today about how small businesses in particular are not getting their credit needs met, that it's something like 50%, according to the NFIB, versus 90% just a few years ago.
Yeah. And it's, people talk about, I think there's another $50 billion program to aid small businesses from the White House. You're talking about $1.5 trillion that have been cut from credit card lines so far. And banks aren't lending. If you look at the, there's a cheap way you can look at it. If you look at the commitments outstanding, they've cut down dramatically on commercial loans across the board, but most importantly on credit card loans.
What's disturbing is we haven't even mentioned Europe. Right. Or the peripherals there, or the degree to which a banking crisis there affects us here.
Well, it's going to affect, you'll see in the second quarter, it's definitely going to affect the U.S. banks that are reliant upon European revenues. And it's going to affect, there was almost no activity in the month of May during the month of May in Europe. And from a banking perspective. But there are infrastructure costs for all of these banks throughout Europe. And so it's going to be tough sledding. Remember that second quarter last year, all of these banks were living la vida loca because you had huge capital markets boons, and they were equitizing themselves, or they were raising money for themselves and taking fees, raising money, re-equitizing themselves. It's going to be it'll be interesting. For me, you've had last year that you had so many different influences coming in on the banks. And so it was easy to say, oh, they're off to the races. They've healed. They're ready to move on. And I think this quarter you're going to start to see that the revenue expectations are going to be very disappointed, very much a disappointment.
But you said double dip for sure in housing, as if to say that I know there will be one, but the jury's out. On the overall economy. Double dips are very rare, right, in the overall economy.
Sure.
Where do you put the chances of?
People doubt there's a double dip in housing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So
the banks,
for sure.
For certain.
What are the chances in overall, you think? Is it,
if I say anything, you're going to bust my chops anyway.
That was guaranteed the moment.
Is it
going to
be?
Right.
No, I haven't been busting them today, though. Really.
Yet. I just got here.
No, I'm not.
You better hurry up.
Consumer, and you got, I had to find out what you were thinking with the consumer.
I'm glad you brought that up. Because
I know.
Because the core didn't change, but the way it all played out looked different last year.
Yeah.
I mean, the modification programs changed the credit reporting for all the banks, and that's about to change. So things looked a lot better. In credit cards, things got better. And in corporate, things are better. Large corporates, things definitely are better.
All right.
But I'm not going to answer the question on the double dip. I don't.
But it's possible. It's a better than 1% chance.
It's a better than 1% chance.
That's okay.
Yeah. Baby steps.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's better than 1% chance. That this is what his job was. It's the perfect cheer. He kept trying to go, well, okay, so you're saying it's a guaranteed for certain giant plunge in the housing market. 20%. Yep, all the banks are going to have to liquidate and everything. But, does that translate into the regular economy as if there's like a difference? I mean, and she's like, well, no matter what I say, you're going to bust my chops anyway. Well, it's just because they're always just reporting numbers. They'll get some big giant stimulus program. See, the people are buying more stuff with their credit cards because they loaned them more money, gave them more credit card limit. What would you think was going to happen? And it's not about savings. They don't even look at that. You don't look at, earning capacity. You don't look at increase in revenue. You could easily just look at the revenue that's generated from just income tax to the government. It's plummeting, state and federal. These guys are just cheerleaders. They're spin doctors. They are nothing. I don't pay attention. The only reason I even watch this stuff is when you get somebody like Meredith coming on and just saying, look, let me, I'm willing to say it. I'm willing to say guaranteed it's going down. You know, I've been saying this before I hear Meredith say it because it's just math. You know, the banks are sitting there on an enormous stockpile of real estate. Enormous. Enormous. How's it going to liquidate? You know, the answer, can you sell anything? Answer is yes. It's just, you know, how low you got to go. They had homes they were trying to get rid of in Detroit, Michigan for a dollar and nobody wanted them. That's how bad. I doubt we'll go down to a dollar here in Phoenix, but it's going to be a lot less than what it is now. I can guarantee you that. And we got young people that are what? Well, they got to look forward to.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Yeah, we're going to rumble here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And I got Drew Phillips in. He's We Are Change Arizona, going to tell us all about what's going on with the We Are Change event that's going on in Salt Lake, Utah. And it's called Axiom 2010, the Truth Tellers Conference. I guess axiom means self-evident truth. So we just had this morning, we had on Richard Gage from the 9-11 Architects and Engineers, 9-11 Truth Guys. And my big thing to him, I'm just going, I didn't even want to talk about the physics and all that stuff. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Everybody knows, everybody believes that you're not going to convince some people, whatever. Now what? 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 Because I'm like, you know, there's got to be a now what? Well, I tell you, you know, the biggest thing that we could agree on was how many more minds can you free? How many more DVDs can you get out? How much more information can you impart? Because I know what's going to happen. We have seen throughout, if you've been doing this long enough and you see the revolution, that's why they call it revolution, just keeps coming around. This is what happens. Especially in England. I mean, you see it in a parliamentary system. They do the same thing, and it happens here, too, just in a different way. You'll have that one guy from the little minor party that's in there and so on. You know, death to whoever, and, you know, peace and freedom and truth and justice and everything for the proletariat and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, what he said. And there will be someone that Fox News and CNN and MSNBC and all the newspaper, they'll go, he's the savior. This guy right here. This woman right here. I mean, they've tried it with Sarah Palin and Tea Party kind of thing. That's not working out. But there will be someone, and they will embrace something that will give them some kind of street cred, and I'll bet you it'll be 9/11. It'll be like, all of a sudden, they're advocating, we're going to release the who really shot Kennedy. I mean, it's going to come out. There's going to be that one person that's going to get it done, that's making headway, that's going to run for Congress. Yes, yes, let's take the ring of power off of that guy's finger and give it to him.
Well, even Republicans are starting to use talking points, you know, like saying the war, maybe we don't need to be the policemen of the world. It's the same thing over and over that we heard from Bush in 2000.
Yeah, but so I'm thinking W said that.
It's just their talking point because now it's acceptable because they're on the minority side and they can swing at the Republicans with this issue when it was their issue to begin with for the last 8 years of the Bush administration. And yes, there already are congressmen that came out and said, oh, you know, yeah, maybe we should look into that a bit more. And I'm running for a re-election or I'm running for senator. And I agree. And actually, Utah, We Are Change Chapters, one that got a gentleman who's running for Senate to say something along those lines. And while I appreciate the man for saying what he said, he didn't say all that much. And he didn't say, he didn't say anything that nobody hadn't heard before. So he was just pandering to those individuals. That was my opinion of the video anyway. But
well, you know, this is what's going to happen. And a lot of people, I'll say this. They'll go, no, that's not what's going to happen. Really? And you say that based on what? On history? It always happens. There's always going to be the person that represents the people, which is always when it's a majority over an overwhelming understanding of a shift in the culture, and then those that did it to begin with, they're the ones that are advocating for what it is that the people want. They're not leaders. They're followers.
Right.
They're followers of public opinion.
So then going back to what your point is that you have to create an environment of people where they already know the truth and they already have the opinion, and then you have politicians that will follow
exactly. The
masses.
So we don't even waste time on just, well, the media, they're doing a press conference. Richard Gage and Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, they're going around the country. They'll be here this weekend in Tucson.
Correct.
So that's why he was on. And they're talking about it. And, of course, we'll promote it and have him on. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, and now what? You know, what are you expecting to happen? My criticism is not that they're doing this, is that they're focusing all their efforts on trying to change the media and government's minds. Screw them. You know, they're going to go to Washington and have, oh, we're going to have the media. What? All of a sudden they're going to go, oh, as long as you explained it that way, I didn't know.
but I would just say for those that maybe aren't fully on board with this issue or have their reservations about it, Richard's presentation does come strictly from the scientific perspective. And I realize that's not interesting to you, Ernie, but For those that criticize people and members of the 9/11 Truth Movement for just running around making assertions that it was an inside job, this is a man who's bringing sound scientific principles to the argument.
I'm very supportive of that. It's just that I'm not willing to go over it into a second decade. Okay,
right.
I am like, it's been 10 years almost. I mean, we're going into, you know, after you hit a decade of this and you get all the evidence, and heck, you even have some European media going, wow, there was a bunch of thermite in the dust. That people know that, right? You know, Building 7, do you even know that? Did you know? And it was molten steel, and you're on and on and on. When you start the accumulation of evidence, you know, of course they know. You know, then what? I know these reporters. I deal with these guys every 2 years. I go to talk and I go, you know this, right? You know, here's a disc. You know this, right? You know this, right? Come on. You know it or you don't know it? You want me to give it to you? I got more than stuff. Make sure you know what's going on. You know, I know, Ernie, but we just can't. It wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Kind of like, all right, then you're part of the problem. Next.
Correct.
And I care what you say. You know, that's why we go to the reporters, the Arizona Republic, the major paper here. We're running for office and so on, starting in 06. This is 4 years ago, okay? We go like this and say, they call, well, we want to, now we don't talk to Republic. Like it was going to do us any good anyway. You know, they always, you know, jerking around. I mean, you get mink. I mean, people are vain. You know, sometimes they say nice things. But, I mean, I'm going, nah, don't talk to Republic. Oh, come on, Ernie. I go, nope, don't talk to you anymore. Because we had Freedom's Phoenix then. We had started Freedom's Phoenix. And I go, I don't need to talk to you. You want anything I got to say, you can get off my site. They go, well, and I go, and Barry always had the best line. He goes like that. Barry Hess, he goes, how does it feel to not report the story to the point now that you can't get the story?
And this year he said he was really looking forward to turning them down the first time they called him. You know, he wanted to turn them down and say, I don't talk to illegitimate news outlets, you know. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. They're so last century, and let's move on and create our own media. And that's
what you're doing here. That's what I want to talk about. We're going to We Are Change. Tell me a little bit about We Are Change. I mean, we know Luke, what's his name, kind of started this thing and working with Alex Jones and doing whatever the heck there. Give us a little bit of the history, but it's evolved past that.
Well beyond that. And, yeah, Luke Radowski is the founder and a member of We Are Change in New York. And this movement did start because of the 9/11 issue. And, of course, the people in New York are very passionate about it. Because it is an issue that affects them personally in their day-to-day lives. So, We Are Change has evolved. Or at least I've tried to evolve it, too, in that I look at it as just a media outlet that I and other individuals can go out and make YouTube videos and post stories on Freedom's Phoenix or other websites, and that we're just out there being our own media and making our own reporting and making up, you know, drawing our own conclusions and sharing our opinions with others through, you know, all kinds of media. Everything's on Facebook nowadays, but, you know, through whatever sites and we post it and do and go. And it at least resonates with our peers. You know, the old people are always, no offense, Ernie, but would you read this site and that site and this site? And I go, no, I read YouTube. And I don't even really do much reading on there. So, you know, it's that peer-to-peer communication, and I can express myself and others can express themselves in an article or a video or in a tweeter or whatever and share it with their peers, and we can share information super fast. So it's really kind of evolved into a neat network of our, you know, our own news network, if you will. But the Axiom Conference that's coming up is a lot of the same types of people: Luke Radowski, Alan Watt, Walter Buring, Gary Franchi, Mark Stevens, A lot of other names that you'd recognize are going to come, and it's, you know, a typical conference type thing, and come and have fun over the weekend. It's the last weekend of next month, the 30th, 31st, and then the 1st of August. And Salt Lake City, Utah. And if you go to the website, axiomconference.com, and that I just linked that on Freedom's Phoenix to their website. You can get all the information about the venue, the hotel, the you know, if you want to make travel arrangements or live in the Salt Lake City area. And we're going to go. I actually got an email today saying that asking if I'd bought my tickets, and I haven't, but somebody else has. And we're going to pack the car and make a road trip. It's 10 hours from Phoenix. So here we come.
Yeah, didn't you go? Were you part of the road trip that went to Salt Lake during the revolution thing? I think Thomas and Shelton and some of those guys did that. Yeah, that was I heard that story. Guys, it's an all-day drive, and they're willing to do it, so rock and roll. And you're going to go there and what? I mean, you know, what are you going to get? Instead of just meeting with these people, you're going to network to accomplish what?
Initially, when this came up, I'm not a big fan of these types of events. To spend my money to travel to go and to do this isn't exactly something I'm interested in, because I've been to a few. But a few people called me and said, hey, we really want to go. Let's carpool. Let's get together. And I'm going, okay, I'll go. And you guys can have fun and watch, and I'll sit in the we're going to have a merch booth and sit in the back and pimp freedom and try to, you know, share I want to bring the political message, because as a member of We Are Change, I always get typecasted as this, oh, you're just a truther and all you focus on is this 9/11 thing. And I want to go and talk and share my experiences in politics and libertarian activism. So that's kind of my goal personally.
Hey, camera in the face of the man. Whoever happens to be the man that day.
Andy Thomas.
Oh, when we come back, we'll talk about it. Andrew Thomas, he was Maricopa County attorney, running for attorney general, and he's been a fibber. So you think these young guys with a video camera want to point it out? And they do. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It's so easy. Oh, if you know how to play the game, let me tell you what we do. You go ahead and just, you know, open it up to the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, and they'll dump whatever they want, like take a big bucket of crap and dump it in your ear, lean your head over a little bit, you know, and that's what happens. So where do you get the other side? You know, where do you get the truth? Where do you get anything? You go to the next generation. Generation Next. And one of these guys, John Stewart, he's like a senior citizen of the next generation. You know, he's I don't know, are you still even in your 20s?
I am. Is he? No, he's an old man. He's got gray hair. He just dyes it, I'm sure.
Who?
Stewart.
Oh, John Stewart. No, I'm talking about you.
Oh,
you know this.
I'm barely still in my 20s. I'm about to not be in my 20s.
Yeah, you know what? We'll get to the John Stewart. Man, he dumped on Obama big time. That's what we were talking about off air, because the left, the honeymoon is over, and there's so much. And it's a great piece. So we'll do a full segment on that before the end of the show. And I just want to make sure you get that, because dang, you know, it's a good one. You guys are hammering on a lot of different issues. The one of late that's really got the big bad guys upset is this immigration bill, SB 1070. And we haven't even got, you know, we're just getting warmed up. I mean, we, you know, starting to do signs, we're at all their events, we're passing out information. You know, what happens, it's not like you got a bunch of Hispanics out there saying, oh, we don't want to go, we want to see what. They're not really talking about the issue. They're not talking about the bill. They're not talking about, they don't even know. They never even read it.
You
know,
it's a reaction.
Yeah, it's just
on both sides.
And nobody's actually read what it does, so what do? We make sure Russell Pierce is known as what he is, Mr. National ID. This is National ID, and they got lined up, everybody with their shiny badge. There's some attorney this, or county attorney that, or running for office this guy, and so on. And they say, I got my bar card. And I say, no, this has nothing to do with National ID. Pay no attention to what these guys are saying. You don't need to read the bill.
They're just terrorists anyway.
Right. Yeah.
You are.
Yeah, I'm a domestic terrorist. So what, Andrew Thomas is running for attorney general as a Republican. He was the Republican county attorney here in Maricopa County, and he was replaced by Rick Romley, which used to be county attorney before, and he went head-to-head with Arpaio constantly. Well, he finally just decided not to run. I mean, he just, I'm retired. He was thinking maybe running for governor. So he decided, and he was a Vietnam vet. I think he had his legs blown. I didn't even know he was an amputee until one time I happened to see he had false legs. He was in a rocket attack in Vietnam. You didn't even know that, did you?
I didn't know that.
No, false legs.
Well, retired or not, he just got appointed to be the county attorney when Andy Thomas stepped down to run for his next office.
I think he's going to run, too, when it comes
up.
For
re-election.
Yeah. So Rick Romley, he was a thorn in the side of Arpaio. And now the Board of Supervisors for Maricopa County, they've had their fill of him, too. They bring in Rick Romley. That is just grins and giggles, man. He doesn't have a legal insulation anymore, which he had from Andrew Thomas. Andrew Thomas, when I was running in 06, we're going around, Barry and I going around the campaign trail and so on, and in 08, and I see this guy. He's scary. We just need more tanks. He would say that. We need tanks. You know, we need just, you know, more force. Because I think he used to be in the Army or something. He was, some commander in Desert Storm or something like that. And everything to him is just more force. And he wants to be Attorney General. I'm going, whoa, man, this is going to get interesting. So now we have him running for Attorney General, and he came out, his office at least, came out and supported this SB 1070 thing. And Drew, called him out on it. Tell us what happened.
Well, yeah, it all up because we knew that he was denying it. So when this thing was going on, the bill was about to get passed. You and other libertarians on Freedom's Phoenix make the argument that this is national ID, and Russell just denies it. So instead of just lying and denying it, he goes to legislative counsel and to Andy Thomas and says, hey, will you back me up here? And they both wrote, this letter, and Andy Thomas's office wrote this letter to say that, no, it's not national ID. These concerns are crazy. Don't pay attention to the crazy libertarians. So he wrote this letter. It had his letterhead on it, and now he denies it. So it's really, he didn't write it. Somebody else in his office did. But it was just really kind of insulting that, his office would put out this paper saying that what we're saying is not true. And then when you ask him about the letter, he denied seeing it or knowing anything about it, but he said he was aware of the issue. So anyway, I was at a function, and he comes walking out the door, and it wasn't really all that confrontational, and I was trying to be polite a little bit. And I said, hey, let's shake your hand. What did you write this letter or not? Is it 1070, and are you comfortable with all of our data going to Homeland Security and Janet Napolitano? And he just said, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. I got to go, bye-bye, and said nothing. I mean, he said nothing to me. And just walked away. And so I just enjoy putting the camera out there and just showing. I never walked forward. I just watched him walk away from me. And, I mean, if that's your county attorney, your former county attorney, the guy that wants to be attorney general, is that the kind of guy you want in an office like that if he's not even willing to have a frank conversation with you?
But did you get on camera the question?
Oh, yeah. And he said, but his quote was, I'm aware of the issue, but I have no idea what paper you're talking about. The paper that has his letterhead, Andrew P. Thomas, Maricopa County Attorney's Office, right on the top. I put it in the video. You can see the copy of the letter in the video right there when he says, I'm aware of the issue, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
See, I know there's a lot of people in the audience that, you've been beaten in the head with, you got to do something. It's crisis. We got to do something. At least they did something. They did something. They just turned over all our ID to Homeland Security. They did something, I know the feeling. I went through this. I'll tell you what it was. Imagine graduating high school in 1979, Soviets invade Afghanistan, Iran hostage crisis, that's where Nightline came from. Day 422, Iran hostage crisis, that kind of thing. So it was constant, the oil embargoes, you had lines, I got Chevelle Supersport 327, Rochester Quadra jet, muscle car, blah, 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 blah. And you know what? That thing, dang, gas was on the top of my mind. Then you have the rust belt starts, manufacturing goes down, recession, interest rates 20-something%. It's just insane. And there was no jobs. I'm going to school, trying to work, doing it. It was a very rough time. Well, it's the same thing now. At the time, they were kept going on and on and on the Cold War. I remember having the feeling that, can we just hurry up and get this thing over? You know, we grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud. That's why I had that one song by Queen, Hammerfall. You know, this is how we felt about it here. You know, this, we grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud.
So now we're in the shadow of the evil invaders from down.
My point is that people, you know, they should just do something about immigration. And I remember the feeling. Can't we just get this war over with? Push the buttons. You know, get the nuke. Just get the exchange. Just get it all done so I don't ever have to hear about it anymore. I'm tired of having my whole life on hold. I'm tired of not having work. I'm tired of the economy going bad. I'm tired of being centrally planned. I'm tired of being controlled. Can we just, you got to do it that bad? Just do it and shut up. So now it's the same mentality. Just pass a law. Just do it.
Who cares what the law is? Just
pass
it.
Don't care. Just do it. Just get it done. I'm tired of hearing about it and so on. Then you get national ID.
And you get all the bad stuff with the well-intentioned. I agreed. They kept saying that 70% of Arizonans agreed with this law. I didn't think that was accurate. I thought 70% of Arizonans wanted something done, and they thought this might be it, like you're saying. And it wasn't, because there's so many downfalls to this bill. It's not a good law. And you have these limited government, Gadsden flag-wearing people down at this Pro 1070 rally saying, we're against big federal government, but the state can pass more laws and have more powers and do more. That's
and turn
okay.
our data over.
And turn
to
our data over. That's okay. So the hypocrisy of that. And so I just wanted to tie it all up with the Annie Thomas thing. I also posted on Freedom's Phoenix a video where we went down to a pro 1070 rally and had our little signs that said, welcome to Arizona, papers, please, with the stormtroopers. That didn't go over so well, but it was still a lot of fun to do it. And again, I've defended a lot of moderate Republicans by saying they're not all racist. The people in this crowd, this is the base. These are the people that you kind of are a little bit, you know. I mean, you would have strung up a pinata of a Hispanic-looking man. This is the ugly side of the Republican. I'm saying not all Republicans are racist. Not everyone in Arizona is racist. But there is a core, and they were at this rally, and when we showed up with our objection, they were none too happy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Where did you put that up? I'll put it up on today's archive.
It's a couple down. Maybe you didn't approve it, or it's maybe I didn't click the button. I was doing it from the computer over there. I'll go make sure it works.
Well,
the YouTube video, I'll put it up. I'll make sure it did.
Yeah, make sure it gets up, and we'll put it on today's archive. We got the Axiom event, We Are Change Utah, where they're putting this up. And what happens, you get street cred, man. You know, Drew shows up at these things and goes, yeah, this is what we're doing in Arizona IA. What y'all doing?
Freebruno.org, free-bruno.org. I'm out of time, so I had to plug it. I'll tell you the whole story. Guy, We Are Change LA is in jail right now on trumped-up terrorism charges because he challenged the man, and they said, no, we're not playing, and they took him to jail, and he failed ID. It's like a Shelton thing. It's going to be ugly, so we'll talk about that later.
Free-bruno.org. Free-bruno.org. Okay, we'll go take a look at it and see what's what. We'll hear the story when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and first chance we get after that, we'll go ahead and play how John Stewart has separated from Obama. Well, not all separated. I don't think he's getting a Christmas card this year. That's what I'm saying. We'll talk about it when we come back.